extent he can put them to use in his one of allergy class. I think I still have those stored away up here or at home.
But they were done specifically for the university. They were done for San Diego State,
they were done out of my pocket, but while I was on sabbatical from the university,
okay.
I didn't ask for any money from the university other than the salary I got for being on the sabbatical leave. That's probably foolish today.
People today might say that, I don't know, but it sounds like it was a wonderful experience.
I never paid much for that. It was something I wanted to do. And Mary and I are both grateful that we were smart enough to take practically 12 months out of our lives and travel around the world.
Sounds wonderful. And when was this again, did you say?
1970-71. We left here, and after being in the East and in Europe, we left here in October.
Mm-hmm.
And we traveled down through the South Pacific, Tahiti and Raiatea and Marea, and north, east, and, no, what they call American Samoa, Western Samoa, Fiji Islands. Then we went on into New Zealand. This part of the trip was all arranged through my agent, travel agent, the Mason. But then when we got to New Zealand, we were on our own. And we got there in October, which is their spring. It was a lovely time to get there. I had a former student there who was teaching at King's College. And so she guided us around and helped us a lot. But anyway, we rented cars down there. We were in New Zealand from October till just before Christmas. And I drove about 5,000 miles in New Zealand. And that's like driving 5,000 miles in California or Japan. It gets you pretty well all over the country.
And
we flew out to Stewart Island, which is a little island off in the south end of New Zealand. Nice birding out there. And I arranged with the Department of Lands and Conservation, whatever they call it, down there to go out to a bird sanctuary off in Auckland. Went out on a supply boat. We didn't want to stay several weeks, it would have been if I'd waited for the supply boat to come back. So we made arrangements for Mount Cook Airlines and dropped him up on his little float planes and pick us up after we'd been there for a while. But that was a wonderful experience. Out there living with the caretaker who was an ornithologist naturalist.
Living
in charge
out there.
Of the place, living with his family.
And was your wife along with you at this point?
Pardon?
Was your wife with you at this point?
Oh yeah, she went with me the whole way.
On every single leg of the trip, huh?
Yeah. She didn't take some of the long hikes I did, like I hiked to the top of the mountain on that island. Stuff like that. But then we, we could move when we wanted to because we were pretty much on our own. And before Christmas we decided we'd go to Australia, so we went to Sydney. Rented a car and drove down the coast to Melbourne, and we had Christmas at Melbourne. Christmas Eve we went out on the Phillip Island and saw the little fairy penguins come in. Have you heard about them?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They come in and they wait for each other, they're all together, and then they come marching up the walks, and they walk right along with you. And they talk to you all the way. And when they come to their nesting places, they just deviate off. And we got froze out there, it was so cold, and then the next day, Christmas Day in Melbourne, it's hot.
Really?
Hotter than sin. Anyway, then we continued our drive around Australia. We only stayed there about 3 weeks because I was committed on January 5th to fly to Philippines. I was the next leg. So we had to get back and leave. And then we went from there to Japan, Taiwan, and Bangkok, and Singapore, and Hong Kong.
And all the
you
rest of this
it.
Trip was
you
it was
there.
A pleasure trip. It wasn't necessarily for
no,
you know, ornithological.
It was a pleasure. Yeah. Most part, I'd made my film.
And you were done.
When we were traveling, it was a wonderful experience because we went to Iran, for example.
You did.
We went to Tehran. And we went down to Isfahan. Had a wonderful trip down there. They took us down underground. On part of this van, didn't ever know it was there.
Huh.
And I went to Shiraz, and then out to Persepolis, the old ruins, you know, Darius, all that stuff. And of course, now you don't even dare go there.
No.
And then we went down to, of course, we went all through India and Burma. And,
you really covered a lot of ground.
We went around the world.
Yeah, right.
We were scheduled, but you know, we were traveling by ourselves. Here and there, we would join groups in the cities, and like we did in Japan. They joined us up with the Japan travel people. So we got around Japan that way. Then we went way up into North India, and went up to Nepal.
That must have been fantastic.
Just going to India is an experience. Calcutta, Banaras, my God. When we were at the Taj Mahal, we were out in the back looking over the river and a human body floating by.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We saw them burning bodies on the banks of Benares, the banks of Ganges, worshipping, you know, in that polluted water.
Yes.
The commercial laundry down there, rubbing your clothes out on washboards along the...
lovely, lovely water, the brownish-colored water.
And then we went to Kathmandu. No, we just got around. Went way down to Kuwait.
You went down to Kuwait as well.
And then we went to Beirut, beautiful Paris of the Middle East, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't
no
dare.
More.
I would never want to see it now. So terrible. And we went to Israel. We got caught up in that little problem. You know, the Arab countries don't like you if you're going to Israel. So in order to go to Israel, to avoid going to it from an Arab country, we had to fly out to Cyprus. And then we flew from Cyprus back to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But our travel agent made a mistake. He put our Israeli tickets in the book with the rest of our tickets. And in Kuwait, the airline people discovered that.
Mm.
And they told us our ticket was not legal. We finally got out of why it was. So we had to go down to Pan American. We were traveling Pan Am and have them straighten that out to get this any indication of Israeli out of there.
It was legal, but it was something that wasn't liked.
Then we were afraid that maybe they had put a stamp in our passport for Israel. And they collect your passports, you know, when you go to these places. So I went to the embassy in Kuwait after having had this episode with the airlines. And I told the girl that we may have a Israeli visa stamp in our passport and we're concerned about it. She said, "Oh, you have a Jewish passport, do you?" I said, "No, we don't. We have a United States passport." Anyway, she sent me the
Jewish
counseling
passport.
And it turned out they hadn't done that.
That's great.
The man in Kuwait said that if they apparently haven't discovered it here, and if they're going to discover it, it's better to have it done in Beirut than here. He said it's a much more interesting place to be tied up. Anyway.
Do you travel still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were down in Indonesia in March. Yeah, you know, we've been pretty well over the world. We haven't done much in South America.
Mm.
We're saving Alaska and Hawaii for our old age. We've been in the airport in Honolulu, I don't know how many times.
Yeah, but you've never...
We're always going, coming somewhere. The last time I was coming from Hong Kong on our way back from Indonesia.
Sounds like you love to travel.
Yeah,
do it if you can.
I don't know how many times we've been to Europe. My daughter married a Greek, so while they lived here in La Mesa, but she essentially became a Greek, and she wants to go back to Israel. We've been down there with them.
How about Northern Europe?
Northern Europe?
Mm-hmm. Have you been up to Scandinavia?
Not too much. We took a cruise along Norway, and we've been briefly into Sweden. We did go to Russia.
You did?
A year ago, May, and We took Finnair to Finland and mm-hmm. went in on a Finnish mm-hmm. tour, bus tour into Russia. Leningrad and Novgorod and Kalinin and Moscow. Then we came out of Russia by overnight train to back to Helsinki.
What did you think of it?
Pardon?
What did you think of Russia?
Oh, I was impressed to the extent that some of my friends were very disgusted with me that I should be able to say anything nice about Russia. Well, we found Leningrad and Moscow beautiful, clean cities, lovely gardens, and interesting places. Mm-hmm. Lots to do. The main difference between Russia, well, one of the main differences between Russia and China is that in China the people all love you. They're there and they smile, they gather around you and they practice their English on you. Mm-hmm. But in Russia, people are withdrawn. And that's, I guess, the way the government wants it. They, mm-hmm. And of course, both in Russia and China, the tourists are all in their own hotels. They have huge hotels in Russia, Cosmos and Moscow, I think it held 3,500 people or something like that. Beautiful.
They don't want the tourists staying in the same hotels as Russia. China's the same way. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing, of course, is I don't know if this even belongs on the...
Well, it's interesting.
The interesting thing is that it's all right to think kindly toward China, but not Russia.
Mm.
That's because our president thinks Chinese are great, even though they're communists, but there's an opportunity for money and trade there. But we're supposed to hate Russia. Mm. I don't like either one of their systems, but it doesn't mean I can't like the people and I can't see what's going on. There'll be some people in my group who are absolutely blinded by propaganda. Anything they saw in Russia, they couldn't see anything good about it.
Why go? If they go into the underground
in Moscow, they call it the metro there.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's beautiful and clean and air-conditioned and big art galleries at the main station, all kinds of
wonderful
art.
Mass transit and systems.
And, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't like their government either.
But at the same time, it seems like a pretty interesting place, and the people are nice.
Yeah. Well, the Russians love music, and of course, literature. I guess those are their strong suits, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, was it Horowitz?
Mm-hmm.
Just went back after. It was Horowitz, wasn't it?
Dave Horowitz?
Hmm?
Dave Horowitz? Horowitz?
He came out of Russia 60 years ago and he's been in this country. He went back after 60 years and the people just. The government didn't even recognize his name.
That's somebody I don't know. I don't know
there.
About it.
But he sat and played this beautiful music for the people who were able to get into the concert. It was on Sunday morning. It's been on Sunday morning twice. He plays his piano for you for two hours. Beautiful.
Really?
Plays all the old classical Russian music, and also he goes in for Mozart.
Internationally classic music.
But anyway.
Well,
I'm sure there are a lot of things I haven't seen.
We kind of got off onto the subject of travel a bit here.
Yeah,
but that's fine.
That
sabbaticals, I think that's how
doesn't
you
that
much, on
there. Yeah, that's right. We got to do it through sabbaticals.
Well, I usually forget to ask a couple of questions of each interviewee mm-hmm. about San Diego State University, and I may discover that I've forgotten to ask you a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And I may ask you for some notes on it.
Yeah,
maybe sometime
could.
In the future. But I can't think of anything right now. If there's anything you would like to add, I'd appreciate it. Any, I don't know, impressions of the university when you first arrived, or something about the campus facilities, the association of life sciences and the physical sciences,
mm-hmm.
any individuals, I even made a listing of the various chairs of the zoology department. I was going to ask you about these individuals, but I don't know if it's necessary.
Well, of course, from my personal point of view, looking back, I feel very privileged to have come to San Diego State when I did, and able to grow up with it. I hope I grew as it grew, but it certainly grew. And it was both very educational, and much of it was a very happy kind of growth that you'd like to see. And then later on, as we got too big and the pressure began to mount, and you didn't feel as happy being at San Diego State as you did earlier on when you knew everybody and you felt like you were a big happy family, all of you pulling together. Now, you know, people come here. I know people on our faculty over here. I don't think they ever get out of this building. You don't see them at any. I've never seen some of these people at any of the university functions. We range rather far and wide, my wife and I, because we like music and we like art, and so we join all these all these groups.
You're always out doing things.
I think I'm even in that history one. They have a foreign organization here in history, you know, and they have a place up in the library, and the Friends of the Classics, I'm in that, and I'm in the Art Council. I don't ever go to the Art Council.
You still have you've had very strong ties to the university, although you're not working for the university anymore.
I guess that's why I come out here most every day when I'm home.
Do you come out here every day?
Yeah, just about.
Wow.
I come out for half a day.
That's right.
I usually go home in the afternoon, work in my yard. No, I like coming here. And I have a kind of association with faculty. I see them in the faculty staff center, and various people who work here, staff and faculty that I didn't have time to socialize with when I was a full-time employee. So I enjoy doing that.
And started talking about this. And I don't take the tape off yet.
But back in those days, the students and faculty, they knew each other and they were interested in each other, and life was centered on the campus in the 30s. Most of the students didn't have cars. And
the social life
they had was associated here. So we had good student organizations because they interested in them. They didn't have television, they didn't have cars, they didn't have all these gadgetry that pulls people off in all directions now. They weren't so horribly money-oriented that they, you know, they didn't neglect their education to go out and make an extra buck for the most part. They didn't. And a lot of money they made was here, 50 cents an hour on government projects, you know.
Well, the students who didn't have any transportation, hopefully they lived close to campus. Or how did they get to campus?
Well, they came on the bus.
Did they come? Okay.
Yeah. Of course, some of them had cars. It's not that they were totally without cars or nothing. Yeah. Nothing like now.
Everybody drives.
Now we have so many cars, there's not room for them on campus.
I know.
And
that's kind of pathetic.
So in a way, I think those young people during those early years at San Diego State maybe got a better education than a lot of them are getting now. That is a better education from the college because they were pretty much tied to it.
They were immersed.
They were immersed
here.
Immersed in it.
Uh-huh.
And that's why student organizations were pretty strong in those days. They were the center of interest. Now it's pretty hard to interest kids into coming out here for a lecture evening.
It is.
Back in those days, why they stayed here.
And a lot of the student organizations on campus now, they have a hard time keeping their membership up and getting the students involved in the activities. I don't know whether it's because they're just not that interested in their field of study, or if it's because they have, maybe they feel that they have too many other obligations off campus, work, for example.
And of course, another thing that we experienced in the early days was the not only the the war and reducing our student population and increasing our concerns, of course, about everything in the world. But when the veterans came back, that was an interesting experience on campus.
Mm-hmm.
These guys came back, they'd been off to war, they knew what education was about, and they wanted it. They knew it, and they set a wonderful example for the younger ones.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. They
really...
I think they pulled everything upward, pretty much. And they were here to learn. And, of course, we tried to give them that opportunity. So it was a good thing for the, you know, the youngsters coming in
mm-hmm.
from high school.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they griped about it because they thought competition was a little stiff, but it didn't hurt anything, really.
That doesn't matter.
On the whole, it was a very healthy experience.
It almost sounds as if had the university continued to develop in the direction in which it was going at that time period, it seems like it was on such a steep grade going up.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego State would be much more than it is now had it not been somehow diverted in the 1970s. Do you think somewhere along the line it began to go downhill a little bit? Well, maybe I shouldn't be prying with that kind of question, but it doesn't seem to have...
I don't think I'd say that the university's gone downhill. It's changed. It's a product of the change in the country and the change in the world. And it's a function of mere size
mm-hmm.
and numbers of people and the rapid expansion of knowledge. Do you realize how knowledge has expanded us? Since the 30s.
Logarithmically.
It's unbelievable. A lot of what's happening now looked like science fiction.
Yeah, right.
Back in the 30s. And so the demands are so much greater today, and the university tries to keep up with things. And I think on the whole, San Diego State's done very well. It's respected in the system in which it's a part, and they've gained almost worldwide recognition, actually. I don't know whether most people know how involved we are with our programs in Europe, you know, and we're tied up with
it's
China.
Japan.
So many things that San Diego State is involved in that wasn't even dreamed of back in those days. So what's happened to San Diego State isn't all bad. I think what is bad is that we just can't keep up. And we can't, you know, separate ourselves away from our times. It's a time in the world where there's great pressure and great stress, great concern, and an awful lot's happening. And I still think that the environment on a university campus like San Diego State, if students take advantage of it, can be very rewarding for them.
Oh, yeah.
My concern is that the pressures on all of us and on students in this case in particular is such that I don't think they get while they're here what the university has to offer.
I agree with you, and I don't know if it's because the students don't apply themselves. They're not that gung-ho about their education, possibly. The students can make what they want of their education. If they're really interested in a certain field, they can go out and they should be able to pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that happening anymore.
Well, I think that what has happened is that there's such a emphasis now on training, which is not necessarily education in the terms that I'm using it,
mm-hmm.
but training to get a job. I have a young friend who is a neighbor boy. He works for me in my garden, and he's grown up, and he's gone through San Diego State, and I wrote him a letter when he was a freshman, and I encouraged him mm-hmm. to get an education. He's going into business.
Mm.
And of course, that's one of our best schools, and we have an outstanding school.
Sure, yeah, that's very good.
But I told him in this letter, asked him if he wouldn't, you know, take the time to get involved in other things on the campus. He never did, but he went through college over there in business administration, flying colors, and he's working now as a financial advisor. He does my income tax fund, and he advises me financially. But he missed so much. His wife is here now. She's doing the same thing. I think she's getting a little more broadly educated. She got out of business, and she's over in home economics or whatever they call that now. They don't call it home.
I know what they call it now.
But she's over there learning something else. But I think the society these days puts such an emphasis on training for a job. You go to college so that you can come out and get a job. Well, that's not all of it. That's part of it, maybe. If you go to college, you probably should be able to get a job. But I still feel if you go to college and get a broad education, you're in a better position for a job in the long haul than you are if you just come here and train.
Right.
My young friend is never going to have any financial problems unless the country goes berserk, which may do.
Right.
You know, he's right in there. He knows his business. And I hear all this stuff, and I tell him, Paul, I trust it's up to you.
But at the same time, he doesn't have the enjoyment of studying good literature or philosophy or ancient cultures. Or
no, but
he's missed all that.
He's writing articles for some of the local papers on investments, and he gives seminars. He's giving a seminar, I think, at Healy's Eye or somewhere. He does all of this, but it's all business. And his father was the vice president of Home Federal. He was a student when his father was.
Mm.
And very wonderful people and wonderful neighbors.
Did you find his father do the same thing? Did his father
go
through and just concentrate only on business?
Yeah, and Paul tells me what wonderful conversations he has with his father. I say, well, what do you talk about business?
and I think along the same lines. I have a hard time dealing with things like that myself.
It just seems like the world is so rich. And when you go to college, you should get a...
rich in information and knowledge.
Richer experience than many of them are getting, but I don't think it's entirely the fault of the university. The university makes these things available. Students can do them. I belong to the Y.
The campus
Y. I don't ever do anything with them, but I think what wonderful opportunities they have for students.
Yeah.
I ought to get over there myself and take advantage of their little noontime programs where they have music and they have speakers and they have put you out in the country on weekends. And I think those things are great, and I think it would be great if more students could take advantage of it. Of course, if more students did, they wouldn't be able to do the program. It would be too big.
Yeah, right. It wouldn't be as personalized.
I got so much out of my college and university experience, and I just feel somehow that so many of our young people don't have time. They see it, they don't have time.
They see it as a rush to get out and start making money.
They're in a hurry to get out, and...
You know what I see, though? I don't know if you agree with this, and that is that later on, after they're out of college and they're making their money, that's when they realize that they want more education. That's when they start to go back to school and really understand it and appreciate it and delve into whatever subject they're interested in.
But scientists, they do. I think many of them do. A lot of them don't. But
hopefully they continue on. Well, I think we better bring us to a close.
I have to.
And I thank you.
Yes.